This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, March 26th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 145. It feels like a big, good, round number. I know it's not round at all, because it's odd. And round, well, round can be odd. Fives are round, right?
Yeah.
Round, wet McMuffin?
In terms of the shape?
Odd?
God damn it.
Shape? Yeah, the five shape is a McMuffin. That's
what we determined
today. It's science
okay.
Of McMuffins.
Those are the voices of Patrick Klepek and Danielle Riendo, our muffinologists. Also joining me, and hopefully not ready to talk about a big, wet, round McMuffin, Rob Zachney.
You know, I've never liked the maple flavoring they add to the griddles. Like, yeah. I think, really, it needs to be earned. Like, the pancake is sugary enough. I'll just dip it in the syrup if I want that maple.
No, of course.
So we know that Rob is getting the single black coffee.
Oh yeah.
That's
well,
what we know.
It depends because
out of this group.
That's the thing about these. That's the thing about those charts is they switch depending on the bit and the group configuration, right? So like,
yeah, out of us four is what I'm saying right here.
But
I think he is getting
depend
the coffee.
On the context.
Of course it does. Of course it does. I'm just saying in this context, I'm pretty sure I know where we all fall.
No, because he was just talking about sopping up like wet syrup with a
so
McGriddle.
Maybe he gets the black
no,
coffee
that's
and a
I
McGriddle.
Saying I reject the McGriddle.
Oh yeah,
you reject
right.
the McGriddle. Okay,
right.
Yes, I see. Yeah. I see. Then yeah, your black coffee.
Black coffee, please.
Yep. Yeah,
you totally. Have food at home.
I definitely have food at home. Let me tell you.
See, I don't even get the black there. Coffee at McDonald's because look, I buy the Kirkland stuff. That's just fine. It's not any better than the McDonald's stuff. Let's just go make that at home. It's a big bag. It's $7.99. It lasts us a month and a half.
Video games.
Yeah.
They're here. And there, you can play them now. One such video game, Far Cry 5.
Finally, we can play
Speaking
them.
Speaking of...
Boy, yeah. Talking about games that take place in Kirkland country.
God. So we're going to talk about video games today. And one of those is Far Cry 5, a game that comes out tomorrow, March 27th, I believe.
Yep.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
But review embargo went up today. My review went up on the site. You should go... read that. Later this week, Rob and I will do I'll do the read and we'll do the conversation, so we'll talk even more about Far Cry 5, but I want to talk a little bit about it here today and then dig into some other stuff. I know we've been playing some A Way Out across this room, some a little bit more Sea of Thieves, and get some questions, hopefully. But yeah, I kind of... Far Cry 5 is one of those games that has hung over the last year, probably, in such a weird way. Where I remember seeing that game for the first time at E3 Judges Week and being like, y'all, there's going to be some conversation around this game. Like, the discourse is going to spread like wildfire, as if there were some sort of wildfire system, as in Far Cry 2's very good fire system.
Far Cry 5 does not have a good fire. It has a extremely bad fire system in which the fires spread for about 30 seconds and then disappear about 30 seconds later.
They burn big time for that 30 seconds and then just gone.
Yep.
No big deal. They're gone now. Don't worry about
the
brush.
It did char that skin that you were trying to get, because if you know, Patrick was like, I'm going to skin this black bear because I need that to get the perks in order to get like the airdrop, perk, and then I was like, I'll just throw a Molotov cocktail at this bear. Well, and then you damage the skin, and then it doesn't count, so.
Not very nice to do to the bear. Just
honestly, you spend a lot of time feeling bad for hunting animals in this game, because it doesn't really provide
people.
Yes, but, like, specifically the animals offer no reason for you to engage them, except that just, here's my sniper rifle, I'm just gonna pelt this, like, bear that's just, like, hanging up by the water, because I need the perk points.
It's super weird. So I think, like, that's the perk points thing is one of the new developments in the game. And in the past, we've talked a lot about them. They got rid of towers and stuff like that. But the one of the things we didn't get into is that they've completely changed how progression works. So if you played Far Cry 3 or 4 or Blood Dragon or Primal, you know that the traditional, like, modern Far Cry arc is that you do quests to get XP and you do some other activities, and XP unlocks kind of certain abilities on an ability tree. Far Cry 4 had, like, the two branches of one. There was, like, the tiger path and the other one. The other path.
Yeah.
The blue, like, blue and tiger.
Like stealth and combat, and basically. Yeah. Stealth and action, right. And those are gone and replaced with just kind of, like, a screen filled with perks that you can buy for points. And you get points by completing challenges. And those challenges, quote unquote, and those challenges are things like get 10 headshots, get 10 kills with a shotgun, get 10 kills with a pistol, get 10 kills with a rifle, fly 2,000 kilometer meters in the wingsuit or whatever, right? Stuff like that. And also, as Patrick said, kill 3 brown bears or whatever. And it feels so detached in a weird way because you're just kind of like, gathering these points in the background, and then occasionally maybe you look at the screen where the challenges are, and you're like, oh, I guess I can get 2 more grenade launcher kills, put me over the edge. This is probably what you were doing with the black bear. You're like, I'll kill another 2 black bears and get some points.
This was prior to realizing you could just break the game's perk system by just tracking down
the prepper stashes,
because you can always find 3 perks in there. But yeah, like the first like 4 or 5 hours of the game before you kind of realize sort of like your different options, it's a weirdly for a game that, like, and this is, you know, indicative of like the larger game, but like in one that tries to emotionally ground you in this world, instead you're like, oh, I need 1 more headshot with a sniper rifle. It's like, I guess I'll switch to that so I can get those 2 perks, because then I can gather twice as much plants when I'm gathering those, although I didn't end up engaging with that.
You didn't do any of that stuff at all.
I engaged with it in so much as you got perks for engaging with the system 3 times.
If you eat 6 homeopathic remedies, you get 3 perk points, so you better do that. But like, that's the thing.
We lost, sort of point out. We're laughing because we lost Rob, and like Discord
just
made
us insulted about all the bears that you've been killing.
Rob hates that we've killed bears.
He's pissed off.
We've also been haunted today.
Yep.
We have problems with my audio and video, then fix those, and now Rob.
Rob dropped out of the world.
Rob is actually off of Discord now.
Discord just pooed out for him, I think.
Well, let's just continue and
keep talking.
Let's keep going.
So the thing to the point with the bear too is like, I know Danielle, you've played these games. Right? I know all about your eagle headshot.
Thank you
your
for remembering. 360
no scope eagle headshot.
Best thing
while under the influence.
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit. There's no more crafting in this game. There's no more like, I got to get 3 bear skins to make an extra holster or whatever. That stuff's just gone. But hunting is like the number one way to get money in this game.
Well, there is like, crafting, crafting is like, you're finding alcohol to make a Molotov cocktail. Although then you can just earn a perk that lets you buy that stuff at a shop and then never engage with the crafting system again.
I still did use those. That's true. I did like
I used it real time in combat when it's like, I need some more proximity mines so I can set up for an upcoming assault. Craft. But then otherwise it's just load up on everything, you know,
when you get back to a base. Totally.
Missions.
That stuff all like works pretty well. It's kind of weird because it actually introduces a little bit of that Fallout 4 style, like, oh, I really need fasteners. let me just like go through this house and hope I find some fasteners or whatever. It's weird because we're talking all about the stuff that's like the progression mechanics and the crafting and not like the holistic picture of this game. Which I think is a really complicated thing. Like, I enjoyed my time playing this game. Also, it didn't satisfy me in any meaningful way. It's like complete junk food that is that I would be fine with if it was in a junk food wrapper. And instead, instead of being like, oh yeah, this is just like a bag of chips, it's like presenting itself like a filet mignon. You know what
but
I mean?
Is,
like,
right. Is the game doing that, or was the marketing leading up? Because so here's the thing. Like one of the tweets I put out just before this was like wondering like what if any impact did Trump's election have on this game?
Rob is back, but there he is. There's his face.
He's popping up. He
just popped up. Here he is. He's back.
Hi, Rob.
So. Did you notice a moment ago, I turned around really suddenly?
No.
And stared out the window because outside there was like a thunderous crash and bang.
It was a bear.
And then a moment later, my internet went dead. The modem was showing like no response. And after a couple minutes of bouncing everything, I came back. Well, Happy Easter!
This is a very haunted cast. This is a very spooky cast. Rob, you froze in place just now, and all of your movement buffered and then played out in fast motion like you're a Japanese horror villain.
Only on Happy Easter, though. Yeah, it was like you were about to say something. You were like about to say the conclusion of whatever that was, and then all of a sudden, like Sander Cohen style, like jazz hands shit happened, and then it was just Happy Easter.
This is a lot. Patrick, you were talking about
was
Trump.
Saying, yes, that I was because I think a lot of us felt, oh, like once when we the original presentation of Far Cry 5 made us think, oh, this is going to be hot take the game. This is like in the middle of the 2016 campaign. Like this is like a thought like, oh, this is going to explore like the alt-right, like the economic anxiety like that, was being discussed. Right. And then a lot of the marketing around the game, like, certainly played into this notion. But what I tweeted was like, you know, did the election in some way, even if along the edges, like, contribute to like an eraser or a changing of this game's tone at all?
Right.
And one of the responses I got from Nibelian, you should follow him on Twitter. He does all sorts of hilarious and funny stuff, and also really good observations. His response is like, well, actually, I think his point was, I think it's just Ubisoft chanced their way into a game that was recontextualized by the environment, and that the politics of most of Ubisoft's games are pretty milquetoast and boring and not particularly hard-edged. I think the Watch Dogs games are like the closest they come to stepping into that. But I'm just saying, like, is it more likely that Trump was elected and then they changed the game, or was the game always this sort of milquetoast and just happened to fall into a larger like context and then just ship the way they always meant to? I think it's possible that both those things are true, but it's largely true that it was just the way it was.
So like Dan Hay, when he first pitched this, talked a lot about like the economic like recession of 2007, 2008, 2009 as being the catalyst for thinking about this stuff. And that stuff has nothing to do with Trump, but it's still completely filled with politics, right? Like his core premise was, and the core premise of the game still, I don't know, Patrick, if you've gotten any of this stuff yet, Danielle and Robin, you haven't dug into this yet, but like again and again, there are the cult's lead figures absolutely do talk about economic anxiety, who is running things in Washington, what the kind of like overwhelming anxiety of keeping up with your news feeds. Like they very much are talking about the fall of the American empire, the collapse of the American system. On the in-game radio, which is a thing you will not hear if like me you decided to travel everywhere with your wingsuit instead of drive around, the radio is constantly talking about people dying in the Middle East and potential conflict, and bombing coming into the coasts, and like all sorts of like very big picture international politics stuff. And I'm not saying that the game, didn't have a lot of that in mind, or that the developers didn't have a lot of the stuff in mind before Trump. I think that that's totally true. Mm-hmm. Though there is some stuff that is obviously very focused on Trump specifically, like the piss tape, which is in this game.
Wow.
Very strangely. I still think that stuff has politics, and I'm still disappointed that they didn't dig into that stuff. I mean, even just the notion of a cult, a game about a cult where you know, they introduced me to Mia Donovan, who is a documentarian and a filmmaker who did a documentary called Deprogrammed, which is all about how deprogramming cult members, cult survivors, cult people who previously had been in cults is bullshit. And like, or at the very least is more suspect than you might think, because the notion of programming or of brainwashing or of this sort of being coercive is much less cut and dry than what the science once thought, the science and the scholarship once thought about cults, that actually cults tend to function from like soft social pressure and through encouragement and through like offering people who are having a hard time finding their place in society a space where they feel loved and welcomed. And then on top of that, lots of structure, lots of techniques to manipulate, but not necessarily to do what we think of as brainwashing.
Like, ooh, like you've been Manson hypnotized style, into following a cult.
And like, yo, all of the Far Cry 5 stuff is literally variations on brainwashing.
God.
It's like programming via like Pavlovian response with like audio cues. It's literally like dunking people's heads in special drugs to make them bliss out, and like it's like literally so like blissing out is a concept in the world of cult scholarship, and they were just like, what if there was a drug called bliss and it just made you like a mindless zombie, like literally a mindless zombie slave, and like torture and like all the stuff that they like go for, like the schlocky and shocking style, like, oh, everything's so bad, this cult's so evil. It's like it doesn't even pay its own shit any sort of mind, which coming off of Far Cry 4, which does not stick the landing 100%, but does at least, and Danielle, I know you can speak to this, Rob, I don't know if you've played Far Cry 4 at all, but like that game at least attempted to dig into some of its core ideas around identity and around like tradition versus progress, and like some of that stuff like bubbled up over and over especially in the main quest line.
I'm like slightly worried that Far Cry games are the new like Star Trek movies, where like every other one is kind of good, and we're
evens
gonna
only baby two, like, four, six.
Two,
let's
four,
go.
Six. All right, so the sixth one's gonna be great.
Sixth one's gonna be weird. The sixth one's gonna be weird,
yeah.
And I think in a week we are all going to have takes about the ending of Far Cry 5.
Okay. Okay.
There's a lot that happens, and there's a lot that maybe sets a stage for what's next in the series.
I actually really want to play this game.
You
like,
should.
Everything you're telling me makes me think I'll be angry, but also enjoy. Like, that's what it sounds like. There's a dichotomy here between, like, enjoying a lot of what the game is offering up, but being kind of disgusted by its milquetoast politics, and or the idea that, hey, there was one writer who really cared and really wanted to get some stuff in.
Right.
But the, you know, the main thrust of the creative team was like, no, we can't.
Well, like, the thing is, again, it isn't even just a dereliction of duty. It isn't like, oh, they didn't try it. You can see them trying it and then backing away. So, like, one, for instance, there's a you can recruit, like, a panther or, like, a cougar onto your team of animal friends.
Good.
But to do that, you have to interact with the person the woman who owns that cougar. And when you meet her...
Is she a cougar?
She's like vague. That's like kind of the bit that they're doing.
Gotcha. The
more important bit is that when I walked up to her, and I'm playing as like a black dude, but none of the dialogue changes depending on who your character is. You can create your own character, but none of that dialogue changes. She said, now you're not one of them Italians, are you? Enough of my jewelry's gone missing already.
Wow.
And like, oh, what? Okay, let me unpack what that joke is. The joke is like, okay, Montana has racists. Sure. Like, Middle America has a real problem with racism. There is a very common racist stereotype that is that people of color, especially Hispanic, like, service workers, will steal things from you. So people who, like, do stuff around your house. That's, like, a common racist trope is, like, you can't trust the help. Because
like setting up a camera if you have a maid come over.
Yes.
That kind of
That type of thing. Yeah. Yes. But they can't have this character say that. Because you have to accept the quest from her, right? And for some players, like probably everybody on this call, if she'd been like, you're not a Hispanic, are you? We'd be like, yo, like, what are you fucking doing? And so instead they do like comedy. Oh, it's comedy racism. She says Italian because like we all know Italian Americans have basically assimilated into white American culture. And therefore, like, it's like a step removed. And so there's a lot of like wanting to have its cake and eat it too in the game in a way that's... just frustrating. Like, just
well, that's the general thing, right? It gets frustrating. Like, I don't think it's a bad. I don't think Far Cry 5 is a bad game.
No,
it's a profoundly disappointing game because like it raises a lot of questions and even in some ways tries to answer them, but just in no way that's satisfying or illuminating or goes to any sort of depth or tries to go beyond anything more than just a jumble of cliches.
Yep.
That's often it, is like you'll stumble upon something and be like, oh, like maybe they're gonna no.
There's
not
a moment.
Really.
There were so many moments where I'm like, oh wow, this is gonna be really good, and then they like fuck up at one little late point, and it scrambles so much of whatever they were going for. And I think that's true for a lot of the through line altogether when the ending comes around. But there's a moment that I'm not going to get too specific into because I think it's an interesting moment still, but where the game tricked me. The game absolutely tricked me. I bought into something the game was trying to do, and then it went to pull the rug out from under me, and at the last possible second, I realized what was happening, and I was like, nope, you're not going to fucking get me, game. And then I didn't do the thing it expected me to do. I refused to do the thing it expected me to do. And then it was just like, all right, well, then start this level over because we need you to do the thing.
Wow.
And it's like, no. Like, I caught you. I figured it out at the last possible second. I figured out the trick, and there's no way to progress without it. And so, in response to that, the game that undermines these moments where the game does want to try to do the BioShock thing or the Spec Ops The Line thing of like chiding you and lecturing you about your use of violence or about your gullibility or whatever it is. Do you know what I mean? Like you're, it does the sort of like finger wag of like, oh, you're just so eager to pull out a gun, aren't you? I'm like, yeah, motherfucker. Like I can't, even when I know I shouldn't, you're not letting me not do it. And also, unlike Spec Ops The Line, unlike even BioShock or Metal Gear Solid, the rest of the game is not this thing that, like, tonally allows for that sort of introspection. The rest of the game is literally, we took over this outpost and there are, like, 12 people downstairs who got the bliss in their minds, and now they're, like, zombie slaves. Go kill them for us so we can go down there and work. Like, all right, I guess I'll go do that. Can you run over some of these people with a tractor? That would be cool. Like,
there's no capture or like the stealth option is not an option in this game. Yes,
no.
You can get a bow and arrow, but the bows, the traditional arrows are useless when it is always more advantageous to use traditional firearms.
Use a gun, just
if you
shoot
get
people.
The other arrows where like you can use a fire arrows. Like there are things where you can like manipulate the environment, but it is not a game. Like, even though it tries to introduce like stealth as like, you know, you can crawl around and it's worthwhile to crawl around to like get the jump on people, but it is almost at the end of the day always advantageous to just blow things up. And I guess I didn't play 4, I played 3, and I also didn't play Primal, but like, you know, my memories of like Far Cry as a series is a lot of like things going like really wrong and like weird, and like you're kind of like messing your way through a situation, or you're setting a fire on the left hand side so you can flank them on the right. And this game, I found its politics disappointing, and I found its open world like really disappointing too. Like the systems at play never or rarely felt like they came together in a way in which like you're often put into like very basic scenarios of like just there's a cult outpost in front of you. There's 7 guys. You need to go in there and take them out. And the whole trick of the Far Cry games is like, yes, we're technically introducing a lot of like similar scenarios, but A, you have a lot of different options on how to approach it. And B, like the world around you is going to do things that like force you to act differently.
Right.
And I just never or rarely found that to be the case. Like, yes, it's funny, like, the 15th time that you realize, like, this part of the world is just, you can't walk in the woods without getting eaten by a wolverine or a turkey or a bear. Like, the animals in this area, I think they're the ones on the list because they are
pissed.
Fucking ruthless.
That's a plot point.
It doesn't make any, like, it's funny, but not in a way that I think the game intends it to be. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll be wandering through the woods, and if you've got, like, one of the animals with you, they're, like, really aware, like, one of the perks of an animal is that they're aware of, like, what's around you. They can mark things. They can tag animals really quickly. And mostly what I just found out was just, like, there's animals everywhere, and it's not it was not systemically interesting. It was more just they just threw a bunch of animals into this world,
and like they only sure did.
Once, like only like I mean, yes, it was funny once when I came across like a set of enemies I was supposed to take out, and they were dealing with like a turkey infestation, and like the turkeys were just wrecking their shit. Like,
fair,
and that was funny. But I just found like as in a series that has been noteworthy for its big worlds with systems colliding and interacting, this game isn't disappointing on that level. I think it's actually an utter failure on that level because it always just was more advantageous for me to just run in, throw some grenades, wait for one of my allies with a sniper to just kind of take out the rest.
Clear out the rest.
And just move on. Like, I didn't find the game pushing me creatively. And if a Far Cry game doesn't do that...
I got a little bit more of it than you did, I think. But I ran into other problems that limited me in that way, right? So, like, for instance, you know, a common thing in a stealth game is like, how well does the stealth game handle the NPCs knowing where I am when they shouldn't know where I am? And so, for instance, if you do a stealth takedown on somebody, no one knows where you are, and everyone continues doing their patrol routes. But if you shoot someone with a silenced weapon, even if no one sees that person go down, everybody goes on alert in the outpost or in the area, and like they're not aimed at you, but they're immediately going into their more active routine, even if there's no way they could have seen the person get killed. It's like, oh well, when the silencer is kind of worthless, then like it sounds cool, like great, but that's it. And I think that sort of roughness was also something I didn't expect, and that I found. Like you mentioned tagging animals, a thing that happened at some point was I had a quest that was about getting roadkill, like running over antlered animals and then getting their meat to then give to like a cook somewhere, right? Because like all of these missions feel like knockoff GTA missions.
Roadkill
it's all
cafe,
like that's
yeah.
It's like exactly what it is. Yeah, 100% what it is. And the guy I'm throwing down here, one of these guys. That's the joke. So to find those animals, I took one of those like homeopathic craftables that marks all the animals. And I had two NPCs with me, two of the guns for hire. And they were just like constantly, Grace, who was the sniper leader, she was like, did you know that crows are the animals associated with, did you know that crows are the animals associated with death? Crows are associated with death. Jess, did you know that crows are the animals? Jess, there was a crow. Did you see a crow? I love crows. Like, literally, just like over and over and over again. And that didn't just happen when I did that. There's like, I put up a little video, like a 2-minute video clip in the review of the same two characters just being like, Jess, have you ever decided, have you ever thought about going to the armed? So, Jess, have you thought about the armed services? Jess, have you thought about the forces? Have you thought about joining Jess? Hey, Jess. Jess, who's looking after you, Jess? And just like triggering over and over and over and over again. And at first, the first time that characters started talking to each other in this game for me, I was like, oh wow, they're doing kind of like a Mass Effect style like banter thing. And they even did it with NPCs and locations. You take a character to like the auto zone that used to be a cult outpost, and now you've taken it over. And they're like, oh yeah, I remember when I got my car fixed here once or whatever. And like, oh cool. But then, like, they just keep repeating those same lines over and over and over again, and not in a way that's, like, it's repetitive, in a way that it's broken. And there's lots of... I've run into a lot of bugs.
This is the glitchiest game I have played in a long time. Like, just this morning, I had a mission where you're flying around in an airplane, and you have to take out these convoys, and I died at some point, and I was like, all right, load me back into the checkpoint. Well, the checkpoint... It loaded me into, like, had checkpointed me right in front of a building. And so I spawn into the plane, and then the plane just explodes.
Good.
Like, it's like waiting through the loading screen, load in, boom. And then it just explodes, and you die. And you know what it does? It loads it again.
The game
doesn't, like, register that, like, oh, right, the player seems to be dying instantaneously. Maybe we should... like, place them back. And so eventually, I just had to start experimenting with it, which is like, how do I... And this game doesn't have load slots, so it's not like I could go back 20 minutes. It's just like, I'm stuck with this checkpoint. And so I started holding the analog stick in different directions. It's like, up didn't do anything. Right didn't do anything.
Oh my God.
Left didn't do anything. But down, if I held down, it got me, like, just enough out of the way that the prompt to escape the plane would come up, and so I could jump out...
Before
parachute
it.
Down, right. And then go and find another aircraft. I actually happened this morning, too. I jumped off. So sometimes when you The way the game gives you the opportunity to open up a parachute or to get into your wingsuit is you have to jump from a certain distance, and then the prompt appears. And I just jumped off a roof, and then, like, the prompt appeared. And I was like, I'm just going to, like, jump into my parachute, like, just for goofs, like, just jumping off this roof that's, like, you know, 10 feet off the ground. Well, I did that, then the animation, like, caught me in the geometry, and I just started falling through the world.
Okay, great.
Until I, like, disconnected and then drowned, like, hundreds of miles below Montana.
Wow! In the lava.
I read a short story.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot, like, it's none of it's, I mean, that the checkpoint was almost game-breaking. I was fortunately able to find my way out of it. But it's been a glitchy mess in a way that I'm usually pretty forgivable, but actually it's been like fairly.
It doesn't earn it. Thing.
And it's not like you're just being like you were so ambitious with your systems.
No.
That like this glitchiness is like excusable. It's like not like you're actually just preventing me from engaging with the game even on the level that I have now accepted for like the lowered bar of how I'm going to enjoy it.
The loop you mentioned, and we should probably move on, caught me in the worst possible place, which is going into the final mission. I was pretty sure that there was going to be a number of options for what I could do.
Yeah.
And so I'm very lucky. I was like, all right, let me back out. I'm going to close the game. Let me upload my save to the cloud, the PS4, like, you know, cloud saves, just in case I want to see the other option and it doesn't let me load another save or, like, go back and try the final mission again or whatever. And so I tried what I guess I would say is, like, the bad option, I guess. ending is a whole thing. I placed through and I'm like, all right, that sure is an ending. And it takes me back to the title screen. I'm like, all right, I'll hit continue. And it loads me, like, a split second before. It loads me just in the middle of the road. Like, just in the middle of a road, just by myself, and then it cuts to credits. And that's it. Every time I hit continue, it just loaded it. Like, I couldn't play the game ever again on that save. Thankfully, I had the save backed up, and I was able to download it, load it in, and then play out the other ending. And then that just took me back to the title screen and let me continue playing as normal. It was like, otherwise, that would have been 20 hours. Just like, oh, I'm done. I guess I'm done with Far Cry. I literally can't play it anymore. So... ugh, it is a bit buggier than I want. It is. I'm so I had a decent enough time with it. I'm just disappointed. Very much. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Oh. The video game. Rob, you're there's something on your lips. I can sense.
Well, I guess so. You were saying earlier, like, it's not a bad game. You had a decent time with it. Reading your review. Did you really, like, more to the point,
it was
pleasant the way video games are pleasant, though. But
yes,
like,
it was a pleasant the way a walk is pleasant, but, like...
Right. But aren't there, like, it just feels like Far Cry 5 is so, it is such a weak-ass version of the type of game it is trying to be that, like, to me, that still kind of smacks of kind of being a bad game. Like, would you do this, or would you do Far Cry 4 again? Like, somebody's like, what should I play?
We haven't gotten into the things that I think are really good about this game, right? I do think that the moving away from the towers is so good. It opens up the feeling of exploration so much more than anything in the previous games. I don't think I could stand to go back and do that progression, that kind of world progression again. Getting quests from NPCs that are like, oh yeah, there's this like rabid wolf pack in the caves nearby is so much better than climbing a fucking tower and the tower telling me that there's a rabid wolf pack nearby. And also seven other things. The prepper stashes, which we talked about on Friday briefly, are legitimately really fucking cool. And I still have three or four more to do, I think. And I'm going to go and do those. Like, I want to finish all of those because I really actually love those. And I think that the general, like, moment-to-moment interaction is totally fine. I didn't write about it in the game because it's totally fine, and there's a million other reviews you can go read that say, like, how good the shooting is or whatever, right? But, like, especially coming off of last week,
yeah.
I wanted to focus on, like, what were the things it had the potential to do well. And it doesn't stick... it doesn't stick the landing on those things. But it does... It is totally passable, I guess is another way of saying it. It's kind of a weird thing. Like, is it a bad game? It's a game that I wouldn't play again. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a game that I'm not recommending you play. I'm not recommending people listening go play it. Like, I don't think it has. It does not have the Austin Walker recommendation. But it was an okay time. You know, I reviewed Codename Steam on the Nintendo 3DS. That was a bad game. Like, it was torture to play through. Like, I've been through those things. I've played games where I've been like, I can't believe I fucking took this assignment. What a fucking idiot I am. This was not that. This was like, okay, I'm going to keep playing. Yeah, I'll put another 5 hours into it tonight. I'll put another 5 hours into it tonight. Like, I'll be disappointed each night when I go to bed. I'm going to go to bed and feel like, man, I can't believe they dropped the ball on this character. Man, I can't believe that, like, Alex Jones is in this game. Not actually Alex Jones, but there's, like, an Alex Jones stand-in who is, like, literally ranting about the globalist elite.
Alex Bones,
like,
yeah.
Basically, yeah. I wish it was Alex Bones. That would be
he's
better.
He's just a skeleton.
That would be,
he's exactly would be Alex Jones, but a skeleton. Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha.
But like those
hire
things,
me,
those
Ubisoft.
Things.
Yeah. Sorry.
They would be better too. Absolutely. You have a degree of sincerity and confidence that this game just can't even pretend to have.
Sure.
Yeah. So it is a bad game in the sense of like, does it execute on what its potential is? No. But is it a thing I did for 20 hours and, like, I'm okay having spent the 20 hours doing that? Yeah. And that's not, again, that's not a bright recommendation. They will not send us an email and ask us to use that on their box quote. but I don't regret having put the time in.
This is a game, Austin Walker.
It functions.
It functions. It does. So, well,
sort of.
Sometimes. Yeah, I'm not even sure I go that far.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
sometimes.
All right, we should take Patrick Klepek.
All right, let's take a quick break. We will be right back to talk more about video games.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we are back. Far Cry 5 is behind us. And also ahead of us, because it's going to be a week
in the
of Far Cry
mirror.
Discourse.
And also looming ahead.
And also dead ahead. Yeah. What else is going on? I know, Rob, you wrote about your most anticipated game of the year.
Oh!
Can we pull up A Way Out, Rob Zachney, Waypoint, and do a little search here on Google. And then if I click here, I think you only talked about it. We didn't write up our most anticipated games, right?
Right.
I won't find textual evidence of you saying that you were.
This is on a podcast, right?
It was on a podcast and it was on an E3 stream podcast.
Okay.
I went back to the well on this game and was like still anticipating it. Glug glug.
Oh, are you lifting the well above your head? And okay,
yeah, yeah.
Can you tell people what this game is, and then we can talk a little bit about our experiences with it?
Sure. So, imagine David Cage saw Shawshank Redemption and The Defiant Ones of Midnight Run, got really excited,
okay,
and was like, "I can make a tremendous co-op experience around this."
Okay.
Where you and your partner, either online or on the same couch, are both inhabiting these main characters of the story on their escape from prison and journey across this fractured land known as America in the 1970s. But really, isn't it also resonant with some of what we see today? And
we haven't gotten to that part yet, Patrick. That sounds good. I'm excited for the resonance.
That's cool. Yeah, I love resonance.
Yeah. And then your big idea was a lot of Simon Says QuickTime events strung together end to end. Oh, and by the way, you're trying to create like a really gritty, realistic 1970s cinema-esque vibe, but your writing is like high school creative writing class level. And your voice actors have never encountered each other and maybe have not read the script twice. And are just kind of riffing into a microphone somewhere, trying to figure out how these characters are interacting. And nobody speaks, and everybody is English as second or third language, which, hey, like, mad respect to people who are masters of multiple languages. I'm not. I'm shit at that. On the other hand, maybe if you're making a story about two guys from the gritty underbelly of American criminal life, maybe find somebody who at least sounds a little bit like the sort of person you see in police procedurals. There's a million actors who do this shit. Like, hire one.
Listen, they were really impressed by Leo and Vincent. They thought they had a good chemistry. The one guy said no shit, and the other one said Sherlock, as if to complete a sentence. Aww. And that was
what?
It. That's
what? Sherlock. What?
Sherlock. What?
No shit.
No what? Shit? Sherlock. We did this stream, so context.
What if all the things Rob said are true, but...
But also, I pet a cow.
And I picked up a plant and broke Austin.
I forgot. Oh, my God. I don't know how to talk about the fact that I had a good time with this game so far, but also everything you said was right.
Sometimes garbage is fun.
Right. It's not. This is a Danielle. Like, you made this case a bunch.
You know, often. Frankly, very often.
I think there are, like, reading Rob's review, like, if I was to have sat down, like, in the context that Rob sat down to play this game, if I had done that, if I had sat down with my wife or a friend who were like, this is, and was like playing into the pitch of like, this is going to be like a gritty, like all that, I would probably have come away with the exact same response as Rob, because it is bad at, like, whereas Far Cry 5, like, doesn't really nail its premise and sort of doesn't, like, necessarily going off in a fantastic other direction, like, I think A Way Out, like, doesn't deliver on its premise either, but there's a way to find a lot of fun in it, and it does do a lot of things really interesting that are worth, like, exploring. It's just nothing, almost nothing related to, like, the underlying premise that it posits. And, like, the moment that I think we flipped on the game and, like, found our fun was when we interrogated the whole, where does the poop go? And, like, I say that both as a joke and also as, like, an indictment of the game, which is, like... It hadn't even thought through something extremely basic.
Very fundamental. Like,
yeah, where does the poop go? The game doesn't know, it doesn't care, and it has other priorities than that. So, and we lean into those priorities.
Yes, please. I haven't actually watched...
Do you know where the poop goes? Do you know where the poop goes?
I mean, like, I have theories. But I would like to know what the context of where does the poop go? What is that context right there? just set this up for me as somebody who's not seen this game in action yet.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. So in A Way Out, there are toilets.
Okay.
Presumably used for where the poop goes.
Where the poop goes. Yeah.
It's a linear immersive sim.
There's a sequence early on where you're setting up the escape, and
you're in
prison.
You're playing as prisoners who are in prison.
That's all
and
I
you're
knew
like,
about.
Oh.
It. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Okay. And so there's a moment where, like, one of the players has to, like, be watching out and distracting the guards, while the other player, like, pulls the toilet out of the wall and, like, starts unscrewing what's behind it so they can crawl behind and, you know, start their escape. There are no pipes attached to this toilet. It is just, like, behind the toilet is, like, a grate that you take some screws off of. And so, like, where does the poop go?
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't go anywhere.
I think it's a portal. There's a poop portal. And it's going to some other dimension. It's why Doom happens. I think it's all in the same continuity. The poop goes to hell. It pisses off the demons who come and invade.
That's why the demons get pissed.
Because they're very upset.
Pooped. They get pooped.
But we found...
Well, they also get pissed. They also get pissed.
We found the poop. We found a river of shit later in which the characters, like, decidedly conclude...
Yeah, but they do say, they go, what is this? And the other guy goes, like, I got a flashlight. That's poop. I'm glad I didn't get hit with it. Another guy goes, I hate poop. And he he does. He hates it. So he hates a lot of things. He hates heights. He hates poop. He hates
You'll
animals.
Hear about the heights.
Why don't they use No Shit Sherlock in that context? Because that's the perfect context for it.
That's true. When he's like, oh no, this is a river of feces, the other guy could have said, no shit, Sherlock. I guess the thing is, yes, shit. That is shit, Sherlock.
I guess you're right.
In that situation.
Yeah.
There's some branching storytelling stuff. And I think part of the thing that's making it fun for us is, like, while we're streaming it, we are very committed to doing the thing we would not be doing in our serious playthrough.
I proposed it early on, and I think it's worked out. Like, there's a moment early in the game as part of the escape. And this isn't a spoiler, like, it's a game about escaping and then other things happen, where we're presented with a choice. And the choice was, like, we could get into a car and try and disguise ourselves as cops and make it out. Like, that was the risky, the Vincent, or the Leo move. And right. then the Vincent move, like, was to be more stealthy, was to go around on a bridge. And normally, probably everyone on this call would have picked the, okay, like, avoid the conflict, like, right. do that. And I was like, what if we play this game, we fight our base instincts, and we do the other options. We do yeah. the wild card. And so far, I think that has played out. Hey, here's a question. Rob, did you go into the house, or did you free the horses?
The horses must be free.
And so what happens?
What happens?
Okay, so pretty much the same thing. The old couple go running after the horses. Then you have access to the house.
So and you don't then tie them up ever.
No, and then you make yourself comfortable.
You don't tie them up and put them in.
You start to like explore their house.
Yeah. yeah. And you can do all the same shit, and there's no timer. Like, you take however long you need. Build a fire. Hang out.
We did do that.
And then the minute... But it's actually way less graceful. So, with them... I saw the part of the playthrough where you tie them up. Eventually, it's like, oh, they get loose, and they immediately know bad shit is happening because they've been tied up by guys who invaded their house,
which is weird, because I want to be clear. We broke into their house because we needed new clothes.
Yep.
That was very important because we had prison clothes on.
Yep.
And I thought they looked good on me for sure, but I wanted a different fit. So we tied them up. We locked them in a closet. And then we did like a bunch of chores for them. We cut wood for them.
Mm-hmm.
I cleaned some dishes or something.
We petted a cow.
We petted a cow. Really I got their sweet. Windmill thing going.
I threw some chickens in the air, like doing some
you did.
Exercise.
You
played
the chickens.
Be,
exactly.
Yeah.
I played the chickens.
The chickens good had for the to be egg aired. Growth. Yeah.
You got to air the chickens. Classic farmhand language.
I ate a plant.
You tried to. You did actually.
No, I did. Yeah, you can eat the plant.
There was just a moment where Patrick's character. So I go into the kitchen at one point. Like, this is the thing that they give you all these little toys to play with in these virtual like little dioramas. And so like I go in there and in the kitchen and I find like a jar of cookies. I'm like, oh, cool, cookies. And my guy eats cookies. I'm like, oh, good. You fucking the last thing you ate was like a fish you caught with a makeshift spear. Like, you deserve
river?
A cookie. No.
This
you're just
is
a regular river. River. Thank you. Down
river.
Yeah. Well,
hopefully up river. Hopefully up river.
Up different river.
Okay,
completely
I see.
Different
river.
Detached river. That way there's no backwash
gotcha.
Poop either.
Gotcha.
So I eat the cookie, and then like 5 minutes later, Patrick's in the same room, and I see it out of the corner of my eye that he's in the kitchen. And he goes, I wonder if I can eat this.
This is the character.
No, that's the character. The character picks something up and goes, I wonder if I can eat this. And I go like, yeah, because it's a cookie, but then I turn and look, and he's just holding a potted plant, and even just thinking about it cracks me the fuck up. It's so funny, and it's I don't know if it's meant to be funny. I don't know what the
no,
effect
I think
was
it's meant like that character's meant to be like sort of a goof,
a
and,
goof
and it's,
yeah.
it's actually one of the moments where like the game's split screen,
yes.
like that. The game probably didn't intend for that joke to be as funny as it came
right.
off to you. That was more serendipitous of our circumstances. But, like, it was a moment in which, like, the fact that the game has a split screen and you're often distracted by what you're doing and not fully paying attention to what the other character is doing, like, that the reason that was so funny was, like, explicitly because yeah. of, like, that split and the way the game is presented. And like,
right. My attention was not there, but it was just enough there to gain my attention in a way that like was so much like a misdirection like punchline on a stand-up show or like a magic show or something. You know what I mean?
Like cut to like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which is so weird. And like, I am surprised that stuff's been working for me, but it has. I'm like very eager to see what's next.
I will say like the... Like some of the mini games, but like some of the mechanics that involve cooperation, I thought have been actually like fairly successful. Like when you're trying, when the two of you are escaping and you are trying to get up like this really long shaft, like you go back
right.
to back, and like it has this little mini game where like you're swapping between the two characters, and like this like little ball is going through a half circle, and you need to tap a button in the center, and it goes really fast, kind of at a weird rhythm, and you need to be going back and forth so you don't fall, and it goes on for a little long, but like for the first like 2 minutes, like it's actually pretty clever. Like when we were whitewater river rafting,
yep,
and
also good.
We started off where we were like communicating, like hey, get to this side of the boat, do this, and then it gets fast enough that you can't communicate. You just need to be doing what you're doing, and those parts worked enough. Like I get like. This game is bad in a lot of ways, but I have found like it is good in different ways, and I'm it's hard to tell how much of that is like us mining for gold out of it, or right. Is it just giving us enough tools that we're able to take it? And this may be related to a Sea of Thieves conversation. Is like, sure. Is it providing like enough tools and verbs for the player to improv, to riff, to find fun that is maybe somewhat separate from like its baseline premise that it doesn't really capitalize on?
Right, right. Have you all put any more Sea of Thieves time in over the weekend?
Just streaming.
I dipped back
earlier.
In,
yeah.
And I realized that I'm like, I can't do it by myself. I do need I need basically someone to make the decision that Patrick made during our away out stream, which is like, we got to get into some trouble. We got to do the bad thing. Because otherwise, like, I'm just the player who is going to run really safe and like who isn't gonna, especially as a solo player. Sometimes I'm not gonna go try to rob some people of their shit. Like, just leave me alone. It's late. I'm tired. Like, I was actually a point where Danica was asking people to play, and I was just like, I don't think I have it in me to have hijinks at 10 p.m. anymore. I'm tired. I'm too tired to be a pirate. And that's like really an old man bullshit response. But like, you to make the fun in that game. Like, I don't know if people follow Danica's really, really good.
You should. Like, if you want to see tweets, like how this, like the people who are having fun with this game and to see the stories, like just go look up Danica's Twitter feed, because like she has had like, I think we all, in some ways, like, why bother playing this game? Because I'm clearly not going to have as much fun as Danica's having.
Right. Well, like, and part of that is, like, really committing to the bit and, like, really fucking going for it and finding inventive ways to screw other people over and, like, having a crew that supports you in doing that stuff. And also being willing to be kind of aggressive in a way, in a very piratey way, that some of the mechanics we talked about last week don't always line up for you to be that way, or kind of resist that sort of play, and like finding the loopholes. And it's really, really cool to read about, and I wish I had it in me. Maybe we'll play some more on stream or something, and that'll give me the push I need to be an asshole.
I feel like maybe Danica has learned enough in her journeys that she can become that person for us, which is like, okay, this is what we're going to do, X, Y, Z. Like, this is how we're going to, like, I mean, some of the stories she's been telling about how her galleon will constantly team. So there's like a group event where you can go fight like high level skeletons, get the best loot. And it's basically impossible to do with just four people. So you do need to like group up with other people in order to make it work. And like constantly what she is doing is teaming up with these people to get all this loot, turning around, firing away at the group they had just worked with, stealing their shit, putting it on their ship and leaving. And like, that requires a certain level, like you said, a commitment to a bit, to be more aggressive in a way the game is not necessarily encouraging, but is obviously systemically encouraging through like what it is set up, right? Like, it may not be like the rules are saying we want you to go be a dick, but the world they've set up has left a vacuum, and the vacuum is being filled by people kind of being dicks. And that's fine if that's what the game ends up being about. Like, I think actually if the game starts leaning into like griefing, I think it can actually start being even more interesting than what it is, even if it ends up alienating some people in the process. Like, that's going to happen.
Rob, you had something. I'm going to let you, but you've not. I'm curious about what your pirate feelings on griefing
are. No, I mean, but like, the game leaves you a desert. Like, if you don't do this stuff, what is there to do? Like, this was the problem I had when I was playing over this weekend. I got on a boat with Heather Alexandra and a couple other people from that same group that Danica is playing with. But we just didn't run in anything. Like, we did a few missions, and it's literally the same. Like, go to this island, dig up a treasure, fight a skeleton guy, sail back to harbor, deliver the goods, get money, sail back out. It only gets really interesting when you run into other players, and really only if there's a like whiff of paranoia and predation in that relationship, because otherwise there's just a boat on the horizon that also doesn't do anything. Kind of Sea of Thieves, it's really fun when like people are preparing to betray each other or hunting each other down or stealing from each other. It's also, I think, maybe the only time it's really fun. And that's kind of this game's problem.
Something needs to be going bad. Something needs to be going wrong for someone for the game to be fun. which is...
Well, it needs more conflict points. And I think actually what the game largely lacks right now is, like, players are finding them, and what Rare's doing is, like, taking notes and, like, okay, how do we, like, produce this? How do we find a way for the... Like, most players are not Danica's crew, right? Most players are going to be a little more passive. So how do we start pushing those people into situations that require them to start engaging or being more creative in this way? Because, like, in the same way that, like, we normally in Way Out or other games choose the more pacifist route, like, if Sea of Thieves is going to be a game a little more about conflict and aggression, how do you then encourage, incentivize, and push players whose predisposition is not in that category to start doing that? I know, Danielle, you mentioned that you'd played this weekend. Like, what was your experience with it?
I've only just played it on stream with you guys. I have been watching a lot of videos of it and sort of watching other stories and so forth and everything with it. Charbog did a really great video on it with the banana boys and just like role playing. Somebody was role playing like a dude who just ate every banana and put them in a rough spot, man. It was a lot. You gotta have bananas.
That's how you heal.
The one thing I was going to say is that something had been tickling in the back of my mind the entire time I've been playing this game, and it was just remembering Velvet Sundown, the other game on a boat, where the entire fun is what you bring with you and how much you want to grief other people and kind of have all those things. That game didn't go very far either. It didn't have very much to it, but it sure was a hell of a time if you could go with people who were like willing to really role play and like have a ball on the crappy ocean in your
Velvet
bad
Sundowns.
Boat.
So good. Yeah. But like part of the lesson there, though, is that game's at its best when you're dealing with someone who's taking it very seriously. Yes. And they are that character and you are the one who is like being a goofball or vice versa. Yeah. And that to me speaks to a potential problem, which is like other games that do this thing where like, oh, the real fun is being hyper aggressive and being figuring out how to like screw over other players. Games like EVE Online. They do have a huge player base of people who don't do that stuff. Like, there's a huge player base of EVE Online players who just mine for minerals and are space
they're
truckers.
They're not the goon squad.
They're not the goon squad. They're not the space pirates, right? Like, they're not there to fuck you over. The goon swarm, sorry. I don't even know what the current goon swarm allegiances are. I don't know what the current... It's been a while. I've been checked out of EVE, unfortunately. I know there's just the space pope is a big deal, but other than that, I've been pretty checked out. But the point there is that like CCP has made the game appealing for those players who are the ones who just trade goods and who are effectively providing content for the players who want to go be space pirates, right? You need those players. You can't just have the Danica crew who is there to fuck things up for other players. You need other players who are willing to be fucked over in their pursuit of other stuff. Like to have, and especially in the absence of NPCs who are going to play that role, right?
Right.
And so like, I don't know that I want to play the version of this game that is just the goon squad, that is just the goon storm, that is just the pirate squad that's looking to fuck me over. I do want to play the one that's the, like, DayZ style, like, hey, are you cool? Like, hey, are we... let's make a deal and see if we don't fuck each other over. And sometimes you don't and sometimes you do. And in the process, if you don't, it's rewarding. It's just as rewarding to get the good thing as if you didn't, as if you do fuck them over. And that's your version of the good time. Like, but right now there is just not a good time. If all you want to do is just like play the game as designed, you really need to dig into how do I overturn this? How do I screw somebody else over? How do I like make a daring raid on this ship as they're docked and doing a mission or whatever it is. And that stuff all does sound, there are really great stories that come out of it. I'm glad I'm not on the other side of those stories. If I was on being screwed over, I'd be so pissed. I'd be like, fuck this game. Because when I get screwed over, it sucks. And even when I succeed, even when I'm like running red speckled chickens from fucking island to island, that's not fun. Like, so I hope that they figure a way to put in fun for the non-Danica squad and allow them to keep playing the game and be put at risk for the real pirates.
And being
productive,
making progress and whatever that means. That doesn't mean XP trees. It doesn't mean skills. There are forms of contribution and progress that are not like our traditional sort of like structures for that. I This game, so by and large, seems to be like a pretty decent success for Microsoft. Like, it's selling well. The numbers are really good. Like, they had to pull the game down for several hours on Saturday, do all sorts of maintenance, which is like, if you're pulling it down on a Saturday, like,
right.
You know, that's a pretty big risk. So I wrote about this in my open thread last week about, like, how do we judge games that have, like, sort of, like, crummy launches but that could still figure things out in the medium or even long term, and that there's a lot of examples of games that have rough starts that actually end up figuring it out and doing not just fine but spectacularly well. You know, look right. at Rainbow Six Siege as a prime example of that. But I think Microsoft miscalculated. I think they – okay. Even if this game ends up doing well, being a success, like, turns out just fine, I think had this game not been $60, had been $30 and pitched as, do you want to make this game with us for, like, the next 5 years? And said, this is essentially our version of Early Access, but it's AAA, it's got resources. One, a lot of the problems with the game would be a lot more forgivable. You would look at, like, crappy quest trees and go, well, whatever. Like, it's just, you know, it's getting started. That stuff will figure itself out. Right. When you have a bad time, rather than necessarily walking away and being like, fuck this game's not for me, you might look at it as like, okay, like, they're still figuring out what they're doing. And I think this game would have fundamentally, or rather philosophically, been far more interesting if it was pitched as, we're not totally sure what this is. We know we have something. Like, do you want to come help us figure out what that actually is? And, like, that's a really... that's exciting, that's inviting, that's, like, much more participatory than, like, what it is now, which it could still end up being all those things, but the actual packaging of it, I think, would have been far more of a success and enticed some players that I've seen that look at what Danica and others are doing and being like, I don't think I have the people to go have that fun, so I'm just not going to give the game a chance. Or right. I'm going to do Game Pass, bounce off it, and move on. And I just think there might have been an opportunity for Microsoft to, one, rethink how we even, like, talk about some of these games when they, quote-unquote, launch, and are going to end up hurting some players that won't be retained because they just, you know, there's just not much for them to do at the moment.
Right, right. Oh, we'll see how it shakes out with more CFCs in the coming weeks, I guess. I'm very curious because I hope that there is. It was funny, we talk about Far Cry 5 and, like, parts of Far Cry we didn't talk about were Far Cry Arcade, which is their new, like, what if there was, like, a level, what if there was, like, a Mario Maker level creator, but for Far Cry, and for really? Single player and multiplayer. Yeah. It's kind of neat. And, like, I did not have room for it in my already way too long review, but, like, there is just, like, a rolling arcade of single player, like, outposts and journeys. There are things that are, like, not even one of the ones that Ubisoft made is, like, not even a combat level. It's just, like, a weird, spooky. It's almost like one of the Max Payne dream sequences. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, like, in the Far Cry engine. You're given, like, all of the assets, not all of it, you're given assets from Far Cry 4 and 5 and Primal and also Assassin's Creed Unity. No, Syndicate Unity. I want to say Unity.
And the French one or the London one?
I think that's the French. French one.
Okay.
I think Unity. Yeah. And also assets from Watch Dogs 2 to build levels with.
Oh my God.
Which is, like, really fucking cool. Yeah. Yeah. I played some that were, like, escapes from prison that turned into, like, weird chase sequences. I played, there's one that was really good that was, like floating outposts inside of a flooded city. And they were going to be, like, I played one that was, like, escape from hell. And I was like, all right, sure. And I loaded in, and, like, everything was, like, red and smoky and terrifying and just, like, there was a Yeti there from somewhere. I don't know from where. Probably Primal. And it was just, like, a very cool thing. And I'm curious to see if we are moving. You know, Ubisoft has been doing a lot of games of service stuff over the last couple of years. Rob, I know you've dipped back into The Division. I think my understanding is that Wildlands has had a lot of great post-release support. You're suggesting, mm-hmm. Patrick, that, like, Sea of Thieves could be that model for Microsoft. And I would like to see that model, like, solidified a little bit and invested in from people who have, from companies that have lots of money and can maybe do that right. So I'm curious to see how all of the games we've talked about today actually shake out and if they can garner that kind of support that can make them something special, you know, 6 months down the line. I think we'll have to see. Okay. Any other last thoughts on anything we've talked on today? I had one question, but I actually think we answered it already. It was a Far Cry question. I think we've weighed in enough at this point. So let's talk about what's going on. Would y'all have any endorsements? I don't want to take the fucking important if true endorsement term. We have to figure out what our own waypointy term is for this. But for today,
please help us.
If you have ideas, let us know in the comments in the forum thread. Did you have a suggestion, Danny? What was your suggestion?
Map marker.
What's your map marker? Put down your waypoint. What's your waypoint for this week
that you're working on?
Danielle, what's yours?
Okay, so this weekend I played the Battlestar Galactica board game, and it was a hell of a time. The humans won. I won. I did not expect to win. Everybody told me the whole time.
Why should I believe you're a human? Wait a second.
I was a human. Slow down. I exposed the Cylon, but I was the sympathizer. So okay, all right.
Can you explain what this game, how this game works, and like what are the
issues? So in this game, there are humans, there are Cylons, and it's a board game, tabletop game. There's the human faction, of course. There's usually a hidden Cylon. I played with four people, so there was only one Cylon, and everybody kind of starts the game going after objectives of like you need to survive. There's a few different win conditions. We were going for the jump condition. You jump the ship however many times to actually win. Now the Cylon will be doing, or Cylons in a larger a game with more players, will be trying to go along with things and then sort of secretly sabotage things, until which point they are revealed, and then they can do more outright disastrous things to hinder the humans from winning.
So you're like doing stuff around the ship, basically?
You're repairing
on each
things
turn,
on the ship, or you're doing like combat. You're a pilot doing combat with you know, Cylon ships, things like that. So there's a lot going on, and everybody kind of has their role. I was Tyrell. I was the engineer, so I was fixing things around the ship, of course. My girlfriend, of course, was Starbuck, and so she was like, you know, flying around. And she, you know, I wanted to be Starbuck, but she had a higher role on the dice.
Also,
so it goes. You got to do what you got to do, right?
Sometimes the dice shake out that way.
We almost lost within the first like 45 minutes. We had a Cylon boarding party. There's a mechanic for a boarding party, and we were at like the very last step before we finally shot the Cylons off. So we almost lost like really quickly, and then we played like a 6-hour game where the humans won. So
I like how you said like we almost lost really quickly. Almost an hour of playing. Super fast. I when you say super fast, Dad Patrick's like, shit, like first five minutes? How is that even possible? It's like, no, 45 minutes into a 6-hour game.
Dad Patrick does not have time to play meaty board games.
No, I understand. That's such a shame. I understand. And this is the first game like this I've played in years. Like years and years.
I've heard amazing things about this game over the years. That actually, it's always been pitched to me as like a... As someone that, like, I'm not against board games. It's always just the time investment has thrown me off. But it's been one... I've always heard it's like a good entry-level board game.
This is comprehensible.
If you have the right
to
guide.
Me, and I also very rarely play board games. And when I do go to like a board game night, I gravitate towards the like funny role playing games that are like the dirty hippie role playing games where all you do is just play a character, not like you have stat sheets or anything like that. It's just
werewolf,
be funny,
and stuff
exactly.
Like
do funny things or do subterfuge with other people. Like I don't need to learn anything to do that.
And resistance
just,
which is like. This game has that element,
it
obviously,
does.
Because one player is the Cylon.
Yeah, and there's it's certainly like more rules heavy than, you know, playing like Monopoly or something. But it's worthwhile, and it was comprehensible to me within a turn or two how everything shakes out. So yeah, I think it is actually fairly accessible for this type of thing. It sure is a time commitment, but it's one of those things that like I can see myself playing this again at some point and really enjoying it and really just having a good time. It's also just a great like. That's an afternoon you're spending with your friends anyway, kind of thing. Like if they're into board games, like it's sure is a good way to spend time. So that's my endorsement / project / prepper stash.
Awesome. Rob, besides nodding along in such a way that I wonder maybe if you're a Cylon, perhaps.
I've had some experiences aboard the Galactica.
I'm not sure
I would play that game again.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, just like bad experiences?
Not bad. I mean, it was memorable. But if you've, like, it was two friends who'd known each other for years who began introducing out-of-game arguments.
Oh, no.
To make the case for each other as Cylons.
No.
And it got weird and heated and super memorable and amazing, but also uncomfortable.
Well.
Fair. Okay. And that's coming from someone who is like a subterfuge vet, so...
Yeah. I mean, this definitely had... Like, it left some of the taste that subterfuge sometimes leaves in your mouth. In terms of endorsements, boy, since reading Cam's thing about it the other week, I have been super into Northgard.
Oh,
cool!
Which is a really interesting, like RTS settlement manager kind of game, and I think it's one of those games that's really worth looking at because your traditional RTS model is kind of broken in a lot of ways. Or it's not broken, but like it's played out for a lot of players. I think a lot of people find those games a little bit less interesting than they once did. That genre isn't quite in decline, but it is maybe in a bit. It's just a little bit stagnant unless you're a major franchise like Company of Heroes or we'll see Age of Empires 4. But what this is doing is it really is an RTS that plays a lot more like a board game. It's got very simple like resource balancing math behind it, but the idea is you're a little settlement of Vikings that lands on an island with other little Viking clans, and all you can work and harvest is in this one like tile, this home tile, and the island is composed of lots of little tiles. Some have extra rich forests on them. Some have little fishing holes. But your people need to feed. They need food. They need wood in the winter. Winter rolls in. Food consumption, like food production, falls to nil.
Right. You can't farm. You can't do much in the winter.
Right. But people burn wood, so you got to stockpile for winter. But in the context of this, you also need to fight, your various Northrendi style monsters, fallen Valkyries, frost giants, other Vikings. It's all super manageable and comprehensible and unfolds at a pretty gentle pace. Like, this is a game where you're actually okay just watching it run for a few minutes to figure out your next move, because the one thing you can really do to destroy yourself is overexpand. And gotcha. if you're like, oh man, if only I had more Vikings to do more jobs, I could really make this economy boom. And you do that just before winter rolls in, and then you realize, like, oh, we're going to starve.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
You just do that. It's really cool, and it forces a lot of these really hard, clear choices on you that you have to manage. So
cool.
I am super into it. I think it's a direction. It's an example of like the other directions RTS gaming can go. And I think there's a lot that's worth playing on its own. I mean, there's a lot there that suggests other games you can make out of it.
That's exciting.
I'm curious about that, Patrick. After Into the Breach stops.
Yeah, really keep you walking down the strategy path.
I think I might actually be a secret closet strategy person.
Between Into the Breach and Mario plus Rabbids, yes, absolutely. There's a point at which it's not a secret anymore.
Yeah.
You put Mario Rabbids above Mario Odyssey on your list last year, very publicly. Patrick, how about you? Do you have anything to recommend to us in the world?
I recommend not watching the season finale of The X-Files and watching everything up till the second to the penultimate episode is actually like The X-Files is a story it's a television show I have a long history with. My show as a kid, like at 100%, like the kid the show I was obsessed with as a child was The X-Files. I was really into aliens and monsters and things like that. And, wasn't super excited when they decided to bring it back, and the collection of stories they told in the first season of the revival from about 2 years ago had a couple of standouts, but was largely forgettable and fell into a really repeatable pantheon of you bring back this show, you probably shouldn't have. They did it again because it was a financial success, and they actually sort of found their groove in a number of episodes. They brought in a lot of outside writers, and there's a handful of, like, not A-level X-Files episodes, but I would say, like, B-, like, in the kind of, like, yeah, this was worth watching and, like, revisiting, and they put it in a context of, like, what Mulder and Scully would be like as humans and as characters, 20 years removed from what they were doing. I think of X-Files in the same way I think of Lost and, like, shows that had, X-Files invented the concept of, like, an overarching mythology, and, like, Lost was the show that sort of, like, picked up that baton in the modern context. In both the frustrating and really pleasurable ways. Mm-hmm. And like ultimately with shows, mythologies work in shows because you like the characters in them, right? Like the mythology only works because it's stacked upon characters you like. Like the reason you care about the, you know, Mulder's sister in the X-Files and Aliens is because you care about Mulder. And, you know, Lost functioned similarly. And I thought that Lost like ended well in the sense that it brought the character arcs to a close. I'm not going to defend all the mythology choices that they made, but like the characters and where they arrive at, I think was deeply satisfying. And X-Files never had that chance because it just sort of sputtered out. It didn't have like a broadly defined conclusion that they could work towards. It seemed like maybe there was an opportunity for a course correction in the revival. And the second batch of episodes, like the second to last episode, which is not written by Chris Carter, the creator of The X-Files, which is important because he's bad and like lost the plot on this series. And the second to last episode is a very like personal, emotional episode about the characters in which like the final scene between them should have just been the series finale because it was about bringing those characters and their emotional journey to a very logical conclusion, and it was like very touching and poignant, and it's like 100% fucking ruined by the final episode, which Gillian Anderson was trolling on Twitter. Go and look up like one of her most recent tweets is her just nodding, putting a gif that is Agent Scully nodding and her in the tweet saying like, I know, because like Chris Carter has like real problems with like how he handles like women characters, and like he has constantly used like pregnancy and to manipulate the plot, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I don't need to go down. That's for the X-Files podcast.
That's literally the first thing that happens in the comeback of the show was like, what if we had another creepy pregnancy? Pregnancy is terrifying in the world of the X-Files.
God.
So in the world of Chris Carter's life, apparently.
Yeah. And so it was the whole revival, and to bring this to a close, like justified his existence by a conversation that happens. And I'm pretty sure that episode was written by a woman, which like maybe not a surprise that they found a way to thread the needle on Scully's like emotional arc as a mother and in her career in that. Because if you don't watch the final episode, you'll actually feel like, oh, they closed the book really well on these characters. And then you watch the final episode, and it's like, nah, like they just actually shredded the book and lit it on fire. And it's a bummer.
So. Not to prolong this segment, but man, no, did I ever feel the same way? Like, obviously, Battlestar Galactica. Playing the board game again this weekend brought back all my feelings about that finale and how I wished I had just watched the second to last episode. So it's highly relevant. Sometimes those penultimates are better. It's cool.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to end things. I think a lot of creators get in their heads
and then they and, take like, a overthink poop it on and the they, thing that they made that was beautiful. They take a big shit in their beautiful punch bowl.
That's where the poop goes.
Now we know.
That's right. It went on to the finales of our beloved shows. I have a music recommendation because I was joined in my writing of the Far Cry 5 review by musician Phil Elverum, who is a fantastic songwriter and musician who does kind of a range of things. I would say like very broadly, I would say like indie. Lo-fi kind of came into prominence in the kind of college radio scene in the early 2000s with a band called The Microphones, then went on to form Mount Eerie. And I've been listening to a lot of The Glow Part 2, which is a fantastic album. If you're ever interested in like, hey, you know, I like, if you like Sonic Youth, or if you like, you know, I think Sonic Youth is probably the easiest touchstone there, like, because, like, otherwise I'm talking about Pavement, and no one knows who the fuck Pavement is either.
Oh, I think that's different these days. I think most people know who Pavement is these days. Anyone that's listening to this podcast probably has at least heard of Pavement.
Maybe. If you like Pavement, you should at least listen to some Phil Elverum's
music. Yeah, The Glow Part 2 is an exceptional album.
It's so good, and I was listening to it all last night, and if you like that and want to hear more, the thing that I'll note is Now Only, which is the ninth album for Mount Eerie, and the follow-up to A Crow Looked at Me came out recently. A Crow Looked at Me was the album that I talked about a lot last year that was about Phil kind of dealing with the death of his wife from cancer soon after the birth of their child. Not soon after, but their child was a few years old. Kind of suddenly or maybe not like overnight suddenly, but with a speed. And it's been listening to Now Only, the follow-up to that album, is really interesting because that first that last album that he put out was so sparse and desperate and like absent of songwriting. Like there's a lot on A Crow Looked at Me. There are obviously motifs and like choruses here and there and things that are you know, references to his older music and stuff like that. But everything is so minimal and so sparse and so empty. And you can hear that he hates the idea of being clever as a songwriter, that he's like resisting flair. He's resisting flourish. And in Now Only, which is again an album about dealing with this and coming to terms with it, it's only like six songs long. He lets himself have the hook again. Like he lets himself write a chorus that's catchy. And yes, it's still a chorus about how people die all the time, but like it is somehow uplifting to hear him come back into his craft. And that has been really fulfilling to listen to. So again, the name of that album is Now Only. And if you want to get into his music in general, I also recommend The Glow Part 2, which is just like an exceptional record. And if you want to hear Mount Eerie stuff, I think for me, probably Clear Moon or Wind's Poem are probably my entry points, but Clear Moon is probably my favorite. So those are my musical recommendations today. That's going to do it for me. I think it's going to do it for all of us. And here's another musical recommendation. Shout outs to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Follow me on Twitter at @Austin_Walker. You can follow Patrick at Patrick Klepek, I'm guessing.
At Patrick Klepek.
Okay. Rob Zachney. @Rob Zachney. Danielle.
@DanielleRI.
There it is. Follow everything Waypoint does. Twitter.com/Waypoint. Facebook.com/waypointvice, waypoint.vice.com. Come read my Far Cry review. I put a lot of work into it. I pulled an all-nighter. I did one of those because it was a very busy week last week. So please support us over at Waypoint by going to waypoint.vice.com. It's going to do it for us today. Oh, before we go, quickly, we actually have a panel at PAX East. I don't know the details offhand. I'm going to look them up. I'm looking it up. I'm going to keep stalling.
It's going to be a great panel. We're going to talk about things. We're going to ask for questions, have a question bucket.
Here it is. I found it. It's at the Bumblebee Theater on Saturday, April 7th. The Bumblebee Theater from 2:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. I'm going to read the description that Patrick wrote. This description for Waypoint Radio Live was written at the start of 2018, and given the way things are going, who knows what things will be like by the time we host this panel. What's up with North Korea? Was Detroit Become Human a good video game? Is Danielle somehow still playing Prey? Join Patrick Klepek, Austin Walker, Rob Zachney, Danica Harrod, and Danielle Riendo for an in-person recording of Waypoint Radio. We may not have many answers, but we will talk for an hour or so.
Accurate.
Good enough. Good enough, I say. So yeah, come join us for that again at PAX East on April 7th from 2:30 to 3:30 at the Bumblebee Theater. Danielle, take us out of this fucking haunted podcast.
Be good and be good at it.
Peggy's.
God damn it.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.